Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back, members. This is a Workforce and Business Development and Labor informational hearing. Members, we will be, I think we do have a quorum at this point. We will be going through the bill that we have before us. There are a few twists and turns and changes that have been included. We're still waiting for the final points that we will be making the corrections. But this is a compromise, members. This is the bill that we initially started with, a great bill, but what we have is a different bill with some of the things that we were fighting for that were not included. With that, I just wanted to welcome our members, and we do have a process. We will go through first with the nonpartisan staff, and then we'll have the commissioners. With that, I just wanted to allow my colleague, Chair Eklund, to invite everyone and just to welcome members and move on with the agenda. So, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I won't take a lot of time. Like Chair Noor said, this is a compromise. It was a, as most of you know, the labor part of our bill headed out of committee and into the conference committee and then into the work groups. We were very heavy on policy, and the Senate version of this bill was not so heavy on policy. So that's where our negotiating stance started, and we went through the process, and I think we got some good things for the citizens of Minnesota in labor standards and other things. And so I'm looking forward to going through the bill and then taking members' questions as far as what's in it, what's not in it, and the process. Chair Noor, do we have to do a roll call and all that stuff, or call to order, I mean?
Yes, Chair Eklund. So with that, I just wanted to call this meeting to order officially, the Labor and Jobs joint informational hearing. I wanted to ask Ms. Doyle to go through the members who are available so that we can have a quorum to begin with.
Chair Noor.
Present.
Noor present. Chair Eklund.
Present.
Eklund present. Vice Chair Zhang Jay. Vice Chair Zhang Jay. Vice Chair Zhang Tu.
Present.
Tu present. Representative Hamilton.
Present.
Hamilton present. Representative Detmer.
Present.
Detmer present. Representative McDonald. Representative McDonald. Representative Baker. Representative Baker. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg present. Representative Bliss.
Present.
Bliss present. Representative Gabney. Representative Dabney.
Gabney present. Apologies.
Gabney present. Representative Edelson.
Present.
Edelson present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie present.
Frankie present. Representative Frederick. Representative Frederick. Representative Greenman.
Present.
Greenman present. Representative Haley.
Present.
Haley present. Representative Juergens.
Juergens present.
Juergens present. Representative Cagle. Representative Cagle. Representative Katiza-Watun.
Present.
Katiza-Watun present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Representative Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Representative Poston.
Present.
Poston present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Raleigh present. Representative Sundin.
Present.
Sundin present. Vice Chair Zhang Jay. Representative McDonald. Representative Baker. Representative Cagle. And we do have a quorum.
And Doyle, Representative Baker has said that he's present a couple times, but we're not hearing him, but on video we can see his mouth moving.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I can see Representative Baker. If you can increase your volume or remove the headphones, that may help you a little bit. With that, members, we do have a quorum present, and this is informational hearing. There are no official actions that are going to be taking place. With that, I just wanted to welcome our nonpartisan staff who have been doing a tremendous job. They have guided us. They've done a significant work throughout this process. I appreciate the work that they have done. I think we will start with Ms. Beckel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to share my screen to go through the spreadsheet.
Go ahead, Ms. Beckel. Thanks.
Okay. All right, so here is the jobs and labor agreement spreadsheet. You'll notice at the top that it does say Senate File 9, the first engrossment. Same thing as House File 1, the first engrossment. My colleague Casey Mum and I worked together to make this spreadsheet. The spreadsheet that you'll see online is definitely a bit more detailed. This spreadsheet I am just using for ease of digital viewing. So you can see the full spreadsheet that shows the governor, House, and Senate original positions online. So this spreadsheet starts with a general fund summary. And so you can see that there's a total of $178.14 million in spending in the first year and $18.5 million of spending, or in the first biennium, and $18.5 million of spending in the second biennium. With the number of cancellations that you see in fiscal year 21, the total net impact on the general fund of this bill is $131.6 million in the first biennium and $18.5 million in the second. Here is just another summary of spending by fund. You can look at that in more detail online. And starting with deed, I'm just going to go through the change items that were in this bill. One thing that wasn't in the bill, and you'll see it a number of times, was the Labor Market Information Office was moved from the General Support Services Division of DEED to the Business and Community Development Division. So if you see anything that says LMI, that's just what that's related to, and that need not be in the bill. So the first change item here is line 74, Business Development Competitive Grants. So the bill provides a $7 million carve out from the full $8.425 million appropriation in fiscal year 22 for technical assistance to small businesses. Moving down to line 82, the bill provides an additional $5 million in the first biennium and $3 million in the second biennium for local community childcare. Line 83, childcare from the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, this is largely for Greater Minnesota, receives $3 million in the first biennium and $2 million in the second biennium. Line 86, the Minnesota Investment Fund, because there are hefty amounts of remaining funds in this fund for right now, the appropriations were reduced from their original amount, still considerable amounts of 10.029, 10.028 million, but less than the typical 12.37 million. So the MIF receives 20.057 million in the first biennium and 24.74 million in the second biennium. Line 88, there's a carve out for the in the Minnesota Investment Fund for the Duluth Paper Mill of $3 million in fiscal year 21. Line 96, 97, and 98 all show Launch Minnesota. And so this is given its full funding of $5 million in the first biennium and $5 million in the second biennium. Line 101 shows the appropriation to the Northeast Entrepreneur Fund. This is $1.148 million in the first year only. Line 104 is one of the largest provisions in the bill, the Main Street Economic Revitalization Program that receives $80 million in fiscal year 2022. Line 105 shows the Main Street COVID-19 Relief Grant Program, and that's $70 million in fiscal year 2022. Of this amount, there are carve-outs for the Minnesota Initiative Foundations of $34.95 million, for the metro area of $34.95 million, and for administration, $100,000 is set aside. This is, again, the Labor Market Information Office moving. Line 112 shows the Airport Infrastructure Renewal, or AIR, program that receives $1 million in the first biennium and $1 million in the second biennium. Line 113 shows the reappropriation of the Hmong Chamber of Commerce. They were unable to use their appropriation from the past biennium, and therefore they applied to be able to use that again. So that's reappropriated. Okay. Line 128, we're in the Workforce Development Fund now. Line 128 shows the Neighborhood Development Center. They receive $750,000 each year for a total of $1.5 in the first biennium. And then we just have items that happened in fiscal year 21 only. And then back to the general fund, the Higher Education Career Advising Program under the advice of DEED was removed. So there's a savings of $500,000 each biennium from that. Line 165, the Minnesota Technology Association receives $875,000 each year for a total of $1.75 million in the first biennium. And that's one-time funding, no tails money there. Moving down again to the Workforce Development Fund, Line 173, American Indian OIC receives $712,000 each year for a total of $1.42 million in the first biennium only. Line 178, the Goodwill Easter Seals Father Project receives $500,000 each year for a total of $1 million in the first biennium only. 179, the International Institute receives $350,000 each year for a total of $700,000 in the first biennium only. Line 180, the Boys and Girls Clubs receive $750,000 each year for a total of $1.5 million in the first biennium only. Line 181, the Minnesota Grocers Association receives $250,000 each year for a total of $500,000 in the first biennium. Line 182, ProStart Hospitality receives $250,000 in the first year only. Line 183, the Construction Careers Foundation receives $375,000 each year for a total of $750,000 in the first biennium only. And we've got a number of these first biennium only items as we continue through the Workforce Development Fund appropriations. Line 184, CLUES receives $700,000 each year for $1.4 million in the first biennium only. 185, Twin Cities Rise receives $1.4 million in the first biennium only. The Minnesota Technology Association was funded out of the general fund, so that is why we do not see funding there. Line 187, Bridges to Healthcare, receives $950,000 in the first biennium only. Line 188, Avivo receives $650,000 each year for a total of $1.3 million in the first biennium only. The Hmong American Partnership receives $300,000 each year for a total of $600,000. Line 190, the Hmong Chamber of Commerce receives $125,000 each year for a total of $250,000. Line 191, the Minnesota Resiliency Partnership receives $450,000 in the first biennium only. Line 192, Summit Academy OIC receives $2.35 million in the first biennium only. Line 193, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Twin Cities receives $250,000 each year for a total of $500,000 in the first biennium only. 194 is Ujamaa Place that receives $400,000 each year for a total of $800,000 in the first biennium only. Line 195, YWCA St. Paul receives 300,000. Line 196, Youth Prize receives 1.4 million. Line 197, Minnesota Diversified Industries receives 900,000. Line 198, YWCA Minneapolis receives 300,000. Line 199, Emerge Community Development receives 500,000. Line 200, Propel Nonprofits receives 2 million. Line 201, Better Futures Minnesota receives 600,000. Line 202, Juxtaposition Arts receives 500,000. Line 203, Workforce Development Inc. receives 550,000. Line 204, Pillsbury United Communities receives 1 million. Line 205, 30,000 feet receives 500,000. Line 206, Getting to Work receives 500,000. Line 207, Project for Pride in Living receives 1 million. Line 208, the African Immigrant Competitive Grant receives 2 million. Line 209, Center for Economic Inclusion, North at Work receives 500,000. Line 210, YMCA of the North receives 600,000. And line 211, Foreign Trained Healthcare receives 2 million in the first biennium only. Okay, so that was the Employment and Training Division. We're on now to the General Support Services. They received an operating increase of $1.525 million in the first biennium and $1.838 million in the second biennium. And then you can see that their Labor Market Information Office was moved to Business and Community Development. Down to the Minnesota Trade Office, STEP grants just for the first biennium were reduced by 100,000 per year. The agency recommended this, saying that they did not foresee being able to use all those funds related to COVID. But as you can see in the tails, it goes back up to the base amount of 300,000 per year. Line 240, the Trade Policy Advisory Council is eliminated. This actually sunset in in 2021. But it wasn't captured in the general fund balance in February. So we're just showing that now. Vocational Rehabilitation Services receives base funding. State Services for the Blind receives base funding. And then here are some administrative holdback items. Items remaining, and we'll get to the cancellations as we go down the spreadsheet. Paid family and medical leave was not put in the final bill. And the Destination Medical Center received the statutory appropriation, so no changes there. All right, 289 brings us to the Department of Labor and Industry, and let's see, we will move down to the first change, which is line 313, operating. The Labor Standards and Apprenticeship Division of DALI, or DLI, received an operating increase of 152,000 in the first biennium and 202,000 in the second biennium. Line 317 shows the funds for nursing and lactating mothers leave modification. So that's 84,000 in the first year and 34,000 each year thereafter. Line 322 is the lockers program, which receives 1 million in fiscal year 2022 only. The workers' compensation division received an extension for their appropriation availability from the workers' compensation fund here, so no general fund impact. And this is just for the updates for their IT system. So that's the cost of 700,000 in the first biennium only. The Workplace Safety Division, line 341, there is an OSHA operating adjustment. Again, no general fund impact. This is workers' compensation fund. And so they received an increase of 1.806 million in the first and second biennia. All right, moving down to the Workforce Development Initiatives Division. Line 356 is, so line 355 and 356 are the same program, but up until now, part of the base for the pipeline dual training grants program was carried in the Office of Higher Education. So this year, the aim was just to put those together. So now the full operating costs for this are in DLI. And so there's an increase of $400,000 each biennium for operating costs. Line 359 is the Career Pathway Demonstration Program, and that receives $100,000 in fiscal year 2022 only. All right, line 367 shows that the construction code had some fee reductions just for this biennium. That was a recommendation of the governor's. Line 370, the contractor recovery fund was modified to allow more payouts to those who faced issues with their contractors. The House research can go into that further. And Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals received base funding. The Bureau of Mediation Services received an operating increase on line 384 of $205,000 in the first biennium and $250,000 in the second. Line 385, the Public Employee Relations Board received base funding in fiscal years 22 and 23, but then it was dropped from the base in fiscal years 24 and 25. The IRRR received its statutory general fund spending. Line 396, MnDOT. Line 398, the Reconnect Rondo project development received $6.2 million in fiscal year 2022 only. Line 400 shows the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and they on line 402 receive $400,000 in fiscal year 2022 only for their career and technical educator pilot at Winona and Minnesota State College Southeast. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture on line 408 receives funding in the tails only in fiscal year 2025 only for the Oriented Strand Board Production Incentive, and that's $1.5 million. There is a little note here just saying that the language also includes an appropriation of up to $3 million starting in fiscal year 2026 and through fiscal year 2034 as well, but we don't show those on the spreadsheet. And these are other items that did not make it into the bill. DHS, MMB, House of Representatives, Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals, and the Attorney General all had provisions in the House bill, but they didn't make it into the final bill. And same with the Department of Revenue. Line 443 starts the cancellations. So as you may have noticed at the top, there was a fairly significant amount of savings in fiscal year 21, almost $46 million. And so these are just canceling various items. So line 444, there were funds remaining from the Department of Revenue business payments. So that's $18 million that was captured. Line 445, MMB County business payments had some left over as well. Line 446, the grants to large venues had almost $1 million left over. Line 447, there was a contingent appropriation to the UI Trust Fund. However, states cannot directly appropriate funds from their general fund to the UI Trust Fund, so that is being canceled, and that's $25 million in savings. 448 shows a cancellation of funds that were not used by 2020 for STEP grants. Line 449 shows the reduction of the Trade Policy Advisory Council, since, as I mentioned, that was sunset in fiscal year 21. Line 450 shows the Hmong Chamber of Commerce, the cancellation of the 125 they were unable to use, and earlier we saw the reappropriation. And then lines 451 through 453 show the administrative holdbacks, the amounts that the governor asked the agencies to look for that they would be able to cancel in fiscal year 2021. And that is the spreadsheet. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Bickel. I think I don't see hands up. I just wanted to allow members to digest that information and wanted to ask our nonpartisan staff, Ms. Anna Shalin, to walk us through the policy provisions, and we will take questions after that. Go ahead.
Chair Noor, I do see questions. I don't know if they're for right now, though. Representatives, okay, all right.
We can wait until we hear the changes to the policy provision. Ms. Shalin?
All right, as chair and members, this is a walkthrough of the jobs omnibus policy sections in the first engrossment. The economic development policy begins on page 32 of the bill. Sections 1 and 2 together create an incentive for the production of oriented strand board from Minnesota trees at a facility meeting certain qualifications. Beginning on page 34, section 3, this allows donations to the state services for the blind. On page 35, sections 4 through 6, together these make modifications to the Business Development Public Infrastructure Program. It puts a 10-year expiration date on development restrictions for BDPI grants and allows up to 15% of a development to be used for a purpose outside the program guidelines, all retroactively. On page 36, section 7, this is the Main Street Economic Revitalization Program. This funds leveraged grants and guaranteed loans for projects that address the greatest economic development and redevelopment needs that have arisen since March 15, 2020, with statewide distribution of projects. Turning to page 41, sections 8 through 18, these are all jobs training incentive and automation incentive changes. They broaden the job training incentive program to both new and maintained jobs and adds an automation incentive to reimburse employers for training workers on new automation technology. This is not funded in the bill, but it does create the policy for the program. On page 44, section 19, this is a long section changing a fiscal year 2018 appropriation from an effluent pipe to wastewater infrastructure in Rosemont. It keeps the funds available until fiscal year 25. Again, only the underlined portion is new language. It's a rather long section. Turning to page 55, another changing a past appropriation subdivision. So section 20, this makes changes to the fiscal year 2020 appropriation for a Duluth paper mill. Again, only that language is changing in this long section. On page 64, section 21, these are modifications to the Launch Minnesota program that supports innovative technology entrepreneurship and requires a report to the legislature on transferring activities of this group to an outside entity outside state government, and also extends the program until 2026. On page 71, section 22, this is the one-time exception to the MIF repayment use. It makes a one-time exception to how local governments can spend repayments from the Minnesota Investment Fund loans. In exchange for transferring 20% of the uncommitted funds to the state general fund, the local government can spend the remainder for any lawful purpose. On 72, section 23, these extend deadlines for compliance with business subsidy agreements under the Minnesota Investment Fund and Job Creation Fund during a peacetime emergency until December 31st, 2022. This is retroactive to March 15th, 2020. Also on page 72, section 24, this is the Main Street COVID-19 Relief Grant Program, which makes grants to small businesses impacted by COVID-19 with preference for businesses that did not receive assistance through earlier aid programs. Finally, on page 75, section 25, this is the Career and Technical Educator Pilot Project that requires Winona State University to develop a teacher preparation program for career and technical educators. And I'll pass it to Ms. Marta James for the labor and industry policy sections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So starting with the labor and industry policy article on page 76, section 1 and section 4 make child labor data received by the Department of Labor and Industry private. Then on also on page 76, section 2 is a conforming change with federal apprenticeship law so that state law is conforming. On page 76, sections 3, and then also there is a repealer attached to this section on page 89. So this is the lactating and nursing mothers and employees provision. And so this would require paid break times for all lactating employees and nursing mothers for all employers. And also the existing pregnancy leave accommodations is repealed and put into this section and now would apply to employers with 15 or more employees. So those provisions would go into effect January 1st of 2022. Section 5, starting on page 78, high-rise sprinklers for public housing. So this would require an installation of the automatic fire sprinklers in existing high-rise public housing buildings. On page 79, section 6, this adds two members to the Construction Codes Advisory Council. One of them would be from the energy conservation industry and the other would have expertise in building accessibility. Section 7 extends the construction industry licensing fee reductions and also clarifies continuing education fees, and that's on page 80. So sections 8 through 10, starting on page 81 at line 20, modifies the definition of the place of public accommodation. This is the wedding barn sprinklers bill. So the place of public accommodation would be lowered from 200 or more people to 100, and then fire sprinklers would be required to be installed in a place of public accommodation if the occupancy of the venue is more than 300 people. Section 11 on page 82, this reduces the continuing education hours that are required for certified building officials from 38 to 35 hours, and that's within a 2-year certification period. Sections 12 to 14, starting on 83, this exempts from licensure plumber installers of commercial chemical dispensing systems and dishwashers when certain circumstances are met. Sections 15 through 18, starting on 84, contains changes to the Contractor Recovery Fund. So these sections modify the payment cycle and increase the limit on the total claims against a single contractor. It also they also limit the use of funds in the Contractor Recovery Fund to only the stated purposes. Section 19 on page 87 is related to PERB, the Public Employment Relations Board. So this board did go into effect of July 1st of 2020. So this now would delay it again to July 1st of 2023 and make that retroactive to June 30th of 2020. The one caveat there is that any pending cases that were filed on fair labor practice charges with the board that are pending would continue to be under the PERB's jurisdiction and would be subject to things like Court of Appeal appeals. Section 20 on page 87, this is just an extension of the funding for the workers' compensation campus system. So a 2020 appropriation for workers' compensation is now going to be available through June 30th of 2023. And then finally, there is a logger safety grant program added on page 87, section 21. And this would provide grants to logging companies for training and safety equipment that reduces the risk of employee injury or illness. And I'm happy to go on to the UI provisions next, Mr. Chair. So the unemployment insurance policy starts on page 89. This is Article 4. So Section 1 on page 89, this would add more options for what qualifies as reemployment assistance training. So one of the things to be eligible for UI is that either you need to be actively seeking a suitable employment and available for suitable employment, or in reemployment assistance training. So this would expand that definition of what qualifies. Sections 2 and 4 on page 91 and 92, this repeals the provision in law that prohibits secondary students, and otherwise known as high school students, from being eligible for UI. So high school students would now be eligible for UI, assuming they meet other requirements. And then section 4 just makes a conforming change, technical. On page 91 and 95, this is sections 3 and 9 of Article 4, these provisions repeal and eliminate the deduction or offset for Social Security benefits that were previously taken out of eligible employees' unemployment payments. So there will no longer be an offset for Social Security disability or Social Security off old age. Section 5 on page 92 provides for faster shared work eligibility. So previously the requirement was that you needed to be employed for 1 year or more to qualify for a shared work program. There was a temporary provision that reduced that to 3 months, and now this would be a permanent change. So employees after 3 months would qualify to participate. Section 6 on page 94, this continues a prior provision that temporarily suspended the 5-week business owner benefit limitation for unemployment. That would continue through September. And then similarly, section 7 on page 94, again, continues what qualifies as a leave of absence due to COVID-19, which would mean that if it's a qualified leave of absence, someone could potentially still be eligible for unemployment for that time, extends that provision as well. Finally, with the changes to UI in the bill, related to adding high school students and removing the Social Security offsets, there would be a report required to the legislature on the impact to the UI trust fund. That's section 8 on page 95. And so they would have to submit that, I think it's before the next session with the report on the impact to the UI trust fund. And that is all of the policy provisions.
Thank you, Ms. Sholene and Ms. James. I know there are many members with questions. I wanted to allow Commissioner Grove to give us an overview, brief overview, and we'll do Commissioner Robertson for DLI, and we'll take the questions after that and respond to the members' question. Welcome, Commissioner Grove. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Hello, everybody. Steve Grove here, Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And it's an honor to be here today. I want to thank Chair Noor and Chair Eklund in particular for their hard work on this bill. In addition to Chair Pratt and Chair Rarick over in the Senate, I believe they're discussing this on the Senate floor as we speak. And I also want to thank the tremendous staff that worked on this bill as well. You just heard from Ms. Sholene and Ms. Beckel, of course. We also had great help from Travis, Reese, Dave Sullivan, Kate Peruschek, Daryl Dannon, and over in the Senate, Andy Eilers and John Beshe. Obviously, a big historic jobs bill, one of the biggest jobs bill in Minnesota's history, the product of months of negotiations, and I'd say weeks of very intense negotiations. And obviously, not everything that we wanted to get from the perspective of the House and the governor we got, but we did get a lot of great things. And I think this bill is positioned to really do some historic things for our economy at a really, really important time for Minnesota. Just a couple of highlights I want to emphasize. The Main Street Economic Revitalization Program, obviously a big program, $80 million in statewide grants to help organizations put loans and grants into the market on economic development projects. Candidly, the House and the governor's office fought for a very long time to make sure those funds could be guaranteed for the corridors in Minneapolis and St. Paul. We wanted dedicated monies there, given the damage that took place in the civil unrest of last year. The compromise is a statewide program. So while we would have liked to have targeted those dollars, the department will assess applications based on the criteria written in the legislature. for those applications. So there's no guaranteed funding. There is a lane there for funding, and we'll see what projects come in from the partners that put them together. But a lot of money for economic development across the state, which should be a good thing. Another grant program for small businesses. You can see the details in the language, but this is very similar to the lottery we ran last year. Focus on businesses that have been passed by earlier programs. And that's another $70 million. That brings us up to about $316 million so far of state money we've put into the market for small businesses. Never enough given the challenges those businesses faced this last year, but certainly a significant amount of money that we hope will help those who still need assistance to make it through this difficult time and build a new future. The child care components of this bill are historic. 8 times more money than we have ever seen in a bill for child care in this bill. We're really excited about that. Both DEED and the Minnesota Initiative Foundations will use that funding to grow child care access across Minnesota. You've all told me in every one of my conversations with you how important this is in your districts, and we hear it too from leaders and businesses across the state. Thrilled to build more childcare slots with those dollars and really a historic amount of money there, as is their historic amount of money for technical assistance in this bill. Over $7 million for business assistance to small businesses getting started up. That's a huge increase from our usual amount. And this kind of money is going to help great business incubators and nonprofits and lenders really coach small businesses on how to get started. It's such an important thing in a time of a downturn and a time of shift, because a lot of new businesses get started and we want to make sure that they're successful. This, of course, is the state with the best business survivability of any state in the country. We want to remain number one there. It's going to take some good assistance from organizations that help small businesses, particularly those from people of color, to succeed. So we're really excited about that component of this as well. I also want to highlight Launch Minnesota, an award-winning program that this body created with the Senate and the governor's office 2 years ago. Funding for 4 more years of that program at the full amount, a great way to ensure startups have a ramp to succeed, that Minnesota companies can get started off on the right foot, and that people will take that risk of starting something new, which again is so important in a time of disruption in an economy. So we're thrilled to refund that program too. Some great funding for Verso, the paper mill up in Duluth, which you're all very familiar with. That mill is now being taken over by ST Paper. That $3 million in MIF funding is just a huge win for the community up there, for one of the Duluth's largest employers. And on the workforce side, you know, we spent over a year with many of you and several others in the community looking at reforms for the Workforce Development Fund. You know, I'll be honest, we're disappointed those reforms didn't pass. Certainly it wasn't for lack of effort and a lot of conversations. But as a compromise, we did see a lot of direct appropriations going to organizations that particularly focus on communities of color. And we are proud to say there's a record amount of money of direct appropriations for those organizations, an increase from $41.59 million in the base to $74.1 million in this upcoming biennium. While we have felt reform was important and still do, to make sure that we have a clear vision for what success looks like, so and we root this program in equity, we do think direct appropriations to, you know, Goodwill Easter Seals and Clues and Ujamaa and Bridges to Healthcare and Better Futures and the Hmong American Partnership and so many more are really going to make a difference. And the competitive grant programs that came out of the bill are really exciting too. For the first time ever, we have an African immigrant competitive grant program for workforce. $2 million is really going to go to good use in those communities. We have a foreign trained healthcare program, which is another $2 million in a competitive grant program for foreign trained healthcare professionals who come here to the US, making sure we can ensure they advance their careers when they arrive versus leveling down based on training gaps. Propel Nonprofits, a great organization that helps the back offices of workforce development orgs, got funding. As did ProStart Hospitality, a group focused on getting early stage folks interested in the hospitality industry trained up and off to the races. One of the biggest policy wins here that relates to DEED in this session was the unemployment insurance shifts that you heard about a moment ago. That's a big deal to ensure that secondary students can get unemployment insurance if they are separated from work by no fault of their own, just like their peers of all ages. This is a policy that has long needed to be changed. The original law was from 1939, a completely different era in American history. And it's really exciting to see that, thanks really to the advocacy of the young people across our state who partner with Youth Prize and the Children's Defense Fund and so many others to raise this issue, and for the hard work that that Chairs Noor and Chair Eklund did on this topic too, we're thrilled to help secondary students who need that money, not just for spending cash in the summer, but in many cases to support their families, be able to take advantage of that that program. As we are excited to help seniors who had an unnecessary penalty that existed for our more senior UI recipients. We've been limited to that penalty at the end of their careers to ensure they get the funding they deserve as well. Some policy changes too for unemployment insurance to allow those searching for jobs to get a GED or an ESL certificate as a way to up-level their skills as they head back into the market. That's so critical as people are coming off unemployment insurance by the thousands every week. We want them to be entering into jobs that are at or above their previous wage rate. That's how our productivity is going to increase in this economy. So that's really important. And finally, some shared work changes in that bill too, I think are really good to make sure that, you know, when folks are doing just partial hours at a company, they can still get some unemployment insurance pay to make up the gap. And that incentivizes people to, or companies rather, to hold on to workers longer term. So again, I just want to thank Chair Noor and Chair Eklund and this committee more broadly. This was a long and thoughtful conversation. I think really a historic jobs bill. We are excited to do the work you've asked us to do with this bill and really look forward to outreach and communication with you in the coming months. So Chair, with that, thanks and back to you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Grove. Commissioner Robertson, please welcome and introduce yourself for the record and give us a brief background on the bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Noor. I'm Rosalyn Robertson, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. I too would like to begin my comments with a hearty thank you to Chair Noor and Chair Eklund for their outstanding leadership and support. I'd also like to thank the nonpartisan staff, the committee staff, and the agency staff that have endured long hours and lots of different versions of everything that we have presented or that which is presented to us. I consider this bill to include significant good budget and good policy for the Department of Labor and Industry. Specifically, the bill addresses an issue that has been of concern to the agency for quite some time, and that has been flatline funding for its operational programs, particularly those that are so critical to supporting both workers and employers. This bill provides for a base adjustment for the Labor Standards Unit, which will allow that program to maintain its existing staffing. That unit exists to provide direct support for employees that are facing challenges or disputes with their employers. It also does a tremendous amount of outreach to the employer community to ensure that we are regulating, we are approaching regulating with education first. And this is the unit that is sometimes the last call, the first call for help, but most often it is the last call for help from both from employees especially, but also small employers that do not have those resources in their workplace to ensure that they are aware of the rules and regulations that guide their particular industry. The bill also includes funding for the apprenticeship unit. That is critically important. We found through a federal grant the value of having professional services available to support apprenticeship sponsors as they figure out how to attract and retain women and people of color in registered apprenticeship. A huge win in this bill is the operational increase for our OSHA program. Certainly, OSHA can be the one regulatory entity that folks love to hate. However, we know the value of being able to respond to critical workplace accidents. But I think the untold story of the OSHA program is just how much assistance we provide to employers. In the OSHA program in particular, we have seen an amazing decline in the number of staff that the agency budget can support. In just the last 8 to 9 years, we've lost 13 positions due to the overall rising costs of staffing and costs all over, including rent and everything else. And so receiving an operational increase of this magnitude will help bring the program in line and will allow us to continue to offer those critical services. Statutorily, we are required to investigate complaints, imminent danger, and fatalities in the workplace. But that's just a small part of the work that we do. We provide a great deal of assistance. Employers can call on Minnesota OSHA at any time and ask for specific guidance on how to address different safety components in the workplace. We believe that that is critical and that ensures that we have a balanced program and that we are a resource to both employees and employers. Additional measures in the bill includes expanding the nursing and pregnancy accommodations in the workplace. I'd like to say a special thank you to Representative Cargo for her effort. And certainly we had similar support on the Senate side with Senator Coleman. This provision will help ensure that lactating mothers will be able to continue to pump breast milk at work. And these are the kind of things that help women stay in the workplace or return to the workplace following the delivery of a child. It also ensures that more workers are covered by this provision. The bill also really looks at the Construction Code and Licensing Division. A number of changes were made there, including the ability to increase the payout of the Contractor Recovery Fund and also increase the number of payouts from once annually to twice annually. We believe that that is really good policy to be able to make more homeowners whole when they are negatively impacted by licensed contractors that do not fulfill their obligations. The bill also carry forwards a fee reduction in the construction trades. This provision saves the construction industry $4.5 million per year. We think that it is really important that we be a good steward over the resources that program bring in, but certainly we do not want to collect more than we need in order to manage the program. By maintaining the fee reductions, it ensures that we are not creating a budget increase that the industry does not need. We're very committed to using the construction code funds for the manner in which it's intended. And so there's also language to ensure that those funds cannot be used for any other purpose other than indicated in statute. We're very grateful to be able to carry forward the workers' compensation and campus funding. Those funds were due to expire on June 30th. However, we have about $700,000 that will carry forward into the next biennium and we will continue to make the campus program as good as we possibly can with the resources that have been appropriated. We think the dual training pipeline funding transfer is just good state business. We have administered the program since the inception, and this year we will be able to continue that good work without the necessity of a funds transfer from the Office of Higher Education. We also had some really good policy in this bill, including the apprenticeship federal conformity, and that provision simply brings the Minnesota apprenticeship law in conformity with the federal law, which requires equal employment opportunity regulation support for an inclusive and diverse workforce. This provision, coupled with the budget initiative to include additional staffing to support this area, is a great complement to the apprenticeship program. The apprenticeship sponsors have indicated that they value the support that they get from labor and industry in this area. And the policy provision, including the budget initiative, will continue to help support apprenticeship sponsors as they seek to expand registered apprenticeship and also ensure that women and people of color have access to registered apprenticeship. Other provisions, other policy provisions include adding additional members to the Construction Code Advisory Council. We saw this year by the number of code-related bills that were introduced and discussed, the real value of this council. This council is made up of a diverse group of stakeholders that all have specific expertise, and they share that expertise with the Department of Labor and Industry so that we can make the very best policy possible. This bill would include two additional members, one from the energy sector and one from the accessibility sector. We believe that by adding additional expertise, the value of the advice that is provided will be enriched. The third policy initiative included what is the child labor data protection. The Department of Labor and Industry is charged with the regulation and enforcement of child labor laws. In that process, we also gather a great deal of information on the minors that are impacted. And so we believe that that information that the department collects and maintains should be protected just as minor data is protected in most arenas. The bill also includes an appropriation for Helmets to Hard Hat. This program recruits our veterans and introduces them to the concept of registered apprenticeship. And you'll probably hear a theme as I go along. Registered apprenticeship is our premier workforce development program. It has a long and positive history, and it certainly is able to produce family-sustaining wages regardless of at which entry point individuals enter into that program. The bill also provides for $1 million to be appropriated for us to establish a logger safety grant program. This program is modeled after our existing safety grant program. We thought it was necessary to provide additional support to the logger industry because the industry has been hit particularly hard. We also recognize that our current program that tops out at a $10,000 matching grant does not provide the same level of support to the logging industry as the $10,000 goes for other industries. So the goal is to increase the dollar value of the safety grants to $25,000 and restrict the participation only to the logging industry so that that industry will benefit and begin to or contribute to the recovery of that industry. The bill also includes the provisions regarding sprinklers in existing public housing buildings, requiring that public buildings be retrofitted for sprinkler systems, and that this will be fully operational by 2033. It also includes the rural event, our wedding barns provisions. We think that this is good progress, and it protects the lives, but it also takes into consideration the small venues that do not have excess occupancies. The bill includes lots of good information, good provisions. However, there were a couple of areas that were not included that we also thought was important, and we hope to see additional discussion going forward, including the earned sick and safe time, paid family medical leave, emergency paid time for essential workers. It did not include federal penalty conformity that we think is really important to maintaining our state plan program. And it did not include the commercial energy code. We'd like to see those provisions considered sometime in the future, and I look forward to continuing the collaborative work with our chairs and members of this committee. So I just want to say thank you again to the chairs. It's been a long and sometime bumpy ride, but I think we had a great team, and I'm very pleased with the overall outcome of this bill. I'll be happy to address any questions. I will stay on the line for the duration of this meeting. So, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Robertson. And with that, I see so many hands. I wanted to ask if Chair Eklund wanted to add anything. I know we had more face-to-face meeting. We've been having meeting with the Senate. I appreciate the my colleagues on the other side, Chair Pratt and Chair Rarick, and the staff from the Senate and the House, and also from the department. Chair Eklund, if you wanted to add anything before we start picking up any questions, and any related to DLI will be going to Chair Eklund. Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Chair Norton, and I'll just compliment both commissioners on the presentation they did. We did have a good team. I believe we were probably the first committee that work group that met face-to-face, and actually we were the first conference committee that met face-to-face before the session ended. And I certainly see the value of being able to sit in the same room, and that's that. We also were able to do some by Zoom and some by the hybrid, or however we wanted to call it. So it was quite a conglomeration of the way we met. But with that, I will hold off with any more comments, and I think Chair Norr, we can start taking member questions.
With that, Representative Baker.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? I know I was having trouble before.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And thanks, everybody. It's good to be back. I think I got a million questions here, and I'm not going to take up too much time because it's too much to absorb. And again, when you sit out of the conversations for a long time, it feels it's a lot to kind of get caught up with again. And we're just trying to figure out a couple things here as to how we repair Minnesota's business climate with our state government. I think there's a lot of damage here, and I think that while there's some good things in this bill, I want to recognize the work of everybody that has been putting some time in. I want to thank the chairs for allowing ProStart to be part of this again. Even though it was a very, very small part of this, I was hoping for more when the direct appropriation started happening. I see we only got 1 year, but again, others were much more generously given. Again, just in light of the restaurant damage and right of the hospitality damage, I think more could have been done. Maybe, Mr. Chair, the question I might have before I make just a final statement is, I am really in the dark about the Rondo project, and I don't remember hearing that come forward to our committee. It looks like more of a MnDOT thing. I'm trying to find the connections, Mr. Chair, about how that fits into our job workforce work here. If you could share that, and then I'll just have one more question.
Thank you, Representative Baker. That's a good question. We presented this in the Ways and Means. This is about the economic development and also to actually heal the injustice that was done a while back. But I can assure you, as part of the negotiations, this may be coming out and will be moving to a different committee as I speak to you. So this is not the end of the road for that provision, but I just wanted to note to you that the OSB and also the Rondo will likely be coming out before we bring this bill to the floor. So I just wanted to assure you this was a conversation that came through, and leadership included as part of the global agreement into our bill. And at this point, I think with the Senate moving to remove those sections, it will be removed and it will be going to a different committee.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chair. It's hard to get our heads around, you know, healing and historical things in this economic development kind of a bill. So I look forward to kind of seeing where this lands. And again, we have to be laser focused on workforce and labor, getting people back to work, which is something I think that we could be doing a better job with. I was really hoping to see some conversations or some part of these bills to try to get people back to work with some encouragements, some incentives to do that. I know we're doing that in our business, and it seems to be working a little bit, but others have to have more guidance on that. I'm glad to see the $150 million in some of this business rebuilding stuff, $70 and $80 million. And I do want help to go to Minneapolis, frankly. They need more help than ever because of the lack of police support that's in the communities right now. I do want to see our Minneapolis business community just get to be thriving once again, and we need to do some things there. So I know that's important. And again, maybe my final wrap up here, and Commissioner Grove and I have had a lot of conversations. I want to find out, I think right now we've got a lot of questions, and we need to rebuild our relationship with our hospitality industry. So as we rebuild this and going forward, Commissioner Grove, are you able to maybe start working with us to try to find a better way to collaborate again? And I think there's a lot of us out there that are feeling frustrated and left out, that the governor has always recognized restaurants and hotels and hospitalities. We did a lot of granting in this December, which you were a big part of. A lot of money went back into the cancellations, as I see today, 3% really of the Department of Revenue grants went right back to the state that never actually found help for people out there. It's a big percentage, and those kind of things are disheartening. So I do hope that, Commissioner Grove, we can find a way to start rebuilding this again. I think there's a real frustrated industry out there. We're the number two industry, I think, in the state of Minnesota with so many people that we employ. So I look forward to working with you on that in the future. But as I kind of pour through the bill, as I work through a lot of these questions, I just know that, hearing Commissioner Robinson talk about the parts of the bill that she did not get in there with the Earn Sick and Save and some of the other big policy things, I honestly can't imagine trying to get that going right now when we don't have employees to work with. So understand, to my Democratic colleagues, this could never have happened. We were trying to tell you that it was a huge reach. And so I just hope that when we get everybody working again, we can then start having these conversations. But right now, we're still in a crisis out here in Minnesota, and this job force and labor committee, I just want to make sure that there was an opportunity for us to feel heard finally before it goes to the House floor. And we'll have a lot more conversations on these deals that are already kind of done. But just again, apologize for a bit of my frustration, but I do hope that we can start rebuilding the relationships that are going to be so important for Minnesotans. So thank you.
Commissioner Grove, did you want to respond quickly?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Baker. Thanks for your leadership throughout this pandemic, working with the hospitality industry. I've enjoyed collaborating with you and couldn't agree with you more. The hospitality industry, by every account, has been hardest hit by the effects of COVID-19 because of the nature of the virus. That's why we have never stopped talking to hospitality, never stopped those negotiations, never stopped those conversations, and why this bill does have some funding that will help those, particularly who haven't gotten grants from previous programs, to collect some dollars, God willing, based on the lottery system that we have to help repair some of the damage. There's not enough money in the world to give back or, frankly, to thank those businesses for whom the sacrifices were made to keep people safe. But with the target that we had, this was the path that was available. And so we'll continue to work with hospitality industry directly. And I couldn't disagree with you more in Greater Minnesota. The reason I'm coming to you from a passenger seat of a car is I'm actually in Austin, Minnesota right now for the groundbreaking of a brand new biopharma facility down here at NewTek, where we partnered with the city and local officials for 35 new jobs in Greater Minnesota that are going to be very high paying and really cement the pharmaceutical industry in this part of the state. So we got work ahead of us. And as a department, we're only going to get that done if we take advantage of the wise counsel of legislators and business leaders like you. So I thank you for that. And I would say just I do have to leave after this question, but my team, a very able team, is here of deputies and others to answer further questions from DEED on the bill. So with that, back to you, Chair.
And Mr. Chair, just the final comment before we lose Commissioner Grove too, and I appreciate that. We weren't looking for money. We're looking for better policy to get people to work. So this work that we could have done on the unemployment extension with those extra perks from the federal government is making a difference for keeping people from at home. So those don't cost money. They get people working. So just not everything we do, the targets are always small. You're right, there's never enough money, but I don't think businesses are looking for money. We just want flexibility to get people to start coming in our door again. So again, Commissioner Grove, I look forward to working with you again. We've got a lot of work to do, and we've just got to, you know, get moving. So I appreciate the time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Bacon. Next in line is Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and I'm going to echo a little bit of what Representative Baker said. I, like him, I'm a hospitality guy. When I'm not working in the legislature, my company operates 5 restaurants and a catering business in the Brainerd Lakes area. I just want to echo that I'm really disappointed in the ProStart appropriation. $250,000 for only 1 year, when you all know that we have an industry that's really suffering for finding folks right now. We've been through a hell of a last year with COVID. Now we're up against, we can't find enough help to operate our restaurants. In my particular case, I have one restaurant that's only open 5 days a week. I have a restaurant that's only open 6 days a week. All of our other restaurants are open shorter hours the days they are open. All of our menus are smaller because we can't find people for the back of the house. I don't know how we're going to get through our catering year. We have more than 50 weddings planned, and we just don't have the people at this point in time, you know, to take care of that many weddings and to get our restaurants up and running at full speed. And I got to remind you that restaurants at full speed are important to not just the restaurant owner and the people that work there, but to all the suppliers that the restaurant does business with as well. You know, the ProStart program we know is a really good program. It brings a lot of people into our industry. There are a lot of schools that would like to have ProStart in their schools, and they are capable of it. They have the facility to do it, but they don't have the money to do it. And $250,000 for 1 year is just not nearly enough. So I hope that can be reconsidered and thought about. I'm sure every night when you watch the news or you look in your newspaper, you're seeing how hospitality is suffering to get people. And this ProStart program really helps us. Up here in my neck of the woods in the Brainerd Lakes area, we have one of the better programs at the Pillager High School. And if that can be duplicated many times around the state of Minnesota, that will produce a lot of people to come into our industry that we desperately need. So really disappointed about that. I hope that we can look at that number. Maybe we could appropriate it for 2 years instead of one, or we could increase the 1 year. There's big opportunity there, and it's a big, big problem. So please reconsider that. I will most likely have an amendment addressing that when this comes to the floor. I know that this is a deal that's already been made, and probably no amendments will go on to the bill, but I think we're really underfunding this area. So thank you, Chair Nora. Thank you, Chair Eklund. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to note that we fully funded the request for most of the entities, and 250 was the amount that was fully requested. If there is more need, we will be looking into the future, but I just wanted to assure you that the bill as it was drafted, we fully funded at this point. And with that, Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I'd like to focus my comments just on the process, and this is probably more directed at leadership, because I understand that maybe you weren't in direct control of this, but it's very frustrating to have served on this committee, and you know, we invested 5 months of this legislative session, and then to have a bill go to Ways and Means and be approved and have just an informational hearing today when, you know, the deal's already baked. It's not transparent for our constituents. It's not transparent at all for us as legislators. And there's a lot of things in this bill I like and a lot of things I don't, but the process itself is something that we should not repeat in the legislature. And that has been not just your committee, Chair Noor. So again, my comments are really directed more towards leadership on how poorly this has been executed. Related to your bill, I wanted to comment on the direct appropriations piece. I know that the department spent a significant time working on a redesign to how those monies were granted. I know there was concern about some stakeholders that kind of took that offline, and that's why it's not in the bill. But I would urge us to continue this work to make that process better for all the stakeholders. And specifically, it concerns me that then the fallback position in this bill is the direct grants to groups. And whether they're good or bad, the problem is we don't know. We did not hear all those groups present in testimony to the public and to this committee. And we also weren't given an opportunity to see the metrics and the performance outcomes that they're being held to receive that kind of state money. A lot of those are groups that we have funded in the past. And during COVID, I know the requirements on performance metrics were set aside because of the people not working face-to-face and maybe not able to come in and get job training. But we really have to recognize that now we're looking at a two-year gap where we've had no accountability state money in these particular direct grant job appropriations segments. And that's concerning to me. And I think it doesn't show accountability on our side with a significant portion of money in this bill. So those are my comments, Chair Noor. Appreciate your work on this. I know it's a heavy lift, but I would urge us to do the process much better next time. And we need to have performance metrics in these direct grants. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Representative Haley. I think there's a commitment from the other body to continue the conversation. We tried. I agree with you. We should have gone through the process of looking into how we can reform the Workforce Development Fund. We were not successful. This is what we're left with, and I appreciate your input on that. There's a commitment and a promise from the Senate. In the interim, we'll be starting to look into how we can design a program that is more functional and will support the industries and also the workers. So thank you for that comment. Looking forward to that conversation. I know you have participated in that. We'll be inviting members to that conversation when we start the process. The next person I have is Lead Hamilton for the Workforce and Business Development.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And once again, I mean no disrespect by not having my video on. If I turn it on, it has a tendency of freezing up. So, Mr. Chairman, and both to you and Chair Eklund, I appreciate your leadership. You know, the comment was made that the conference committee met in person, which we did. And everything was going very well. We adopted same and similars. But when we started disagreeing, that's when basically we stopped meeting. In fact, the last 10 days, roughly a week and a half towards the end of session, regular session, we didn't meet anymore. And friends, this is something that all of us, Democrats and Republicans, we need to put our heads together on this process towards the end of session. Because not only do members get cut out in the process, but the public does as well in many instances. And again, it's going to take all of us to figure this out so that just a handful of people aren't making the final decisions. Again, we have very, very good people on these committees, wonderful people with great experience and backgrounds. And everybody should be included in this process, if you will. You know, when this was put together, Chair Neuer, I do appreciate the calls that you made to me, doing the best to keep me informed and updated as well, and along with Senator Chair Pratt. But again, it would have been helpful. And Chair Neuer, you and I had this conversation too about getting the entire committee together and the benefits that brings. And so, like I said, all of us are going to have to figure this out. And, you know, if nothing else, start pushing back on leadership, both Democrats and Republicans, to once again reestablish the committee process. You know, I'll take you back to 2011. I had the opportunity to chair the Ag Committee. And back then, there was a lot of controversy and everything else, but it was the Aggies, if you will, that all pulled together and worked with Governor Dayton at the time. And it was the only committee at that time that was signed into law during regular session. It can be done, you know, and again, just being open and including individuals in the process. You know, I think about how this ended up and was brought, put together, brought and passed out of Ways and Means before, you know, we've had just very little chance to even take a look at it. And I do appreciate the informational hearing. But again, I'm just keep coming back to the point that we all of us have to figure this out to make sure that the process works as it should. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much, Representative Hamilton. I know the conferees, including you, we had Representative Olson, and also we had Representative Berg, who are included in that. We insisted but did not prevail, knowing that we have the only divided government in a state level. So that meant negotiating with the other body to ensure that everyone was included. But we kept on meeting, whether it was with the chairs, including the departments and the nonpartisan staff, and also the department staff, to make sure that we created a good bill. And hopefully that this is the product of a compromise that we have before you today. The next person on the list is Representative Juggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I don't need to repeat some of the things that some of my colleagues have all already said. My biggest concern with this, as has been said, is the process. And even just now, Chair Neuer, and you said that the work continued with the chairs, the department staff, nonpartisan staff. You know who's left out of that? The public. The public has not had the opportunity to weigh in on this bill since early on in session. There's some good that's in this bill, the helmets to hard hats. I'm glad to see that in there. And to be quite honest, I'm shocked to even see that the Duluth paper mill language is still in here, even though that it's changed. I do have one question regarding that, specifically to the Duluth paper mill. It says in here that it has changed from a grant to a loan, but it's forgivable at 25% after the second year. If all of the employment metrics are met and all of the other contractual obligations are met, how much of that $3 million stands to actually be paid back to the state of Minnesota. Is it possible that if those are met, that this becomes a $3 million grant as opposed to any payback from this company? And I'm not sure who can answer for that.
I'll quickly respond to that. I think that bill never changed significantly because we adopted those same and similar language provision in a public setting, and there was a public input. We had many individuals who came to testify and provide us with the guidance. So with that provision, I did not see any changes that was adopted during the conference committee, which was also a public hearing. Quite frankly, this bill, almost all those provisions that we have discussed were vetted through this committee, and also some of them were vetted through the Senate. So part of the negotiation, you've got two bodies and you have to align based on the language that is presented.
And how much needs would that actually be paid back, if any, Mr. Chair?
I just want, Deputy Commissioner McKinnon, I think you're familiar with that project. I don't know if you wanted to respond to that question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner at Deed. Representative Juergens, over a five-year period, that would be forgiven. The entire amount would be forgiven over the five-year period, provided that they make they keep the employees that they said they would over that five-year period at 25% per year.
Okay, that.
Representative Jones.
Thank you. Thank you for the response, Mr. McKinnon. That's kind of what I expected. No need to go. And Chair Neuer, I do remember that we did hear that in committee, but the fact that it made it into the bill is what surprised me. Somebody asked about the Rondo project earlier. That will possibly get pulled out of this bill only to show up in another bill doesn't make me feel any better about it. It's still $6.5 million or whatever it is for the state of Minnesota, which is just the first of probably $1 billion worth of spending for a boondoggle. And the fact that it comes out of this bill and goes into another one doesn't make me feel any better about that spending. There's so much more we could say about it, but there's other hands that are up, so I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. I understand how you feel about it, but at least we will have that conversation, and it's a good thing for us to look into from the lens and the perspective, the message that we're sending to the Rondo community, which was displaced because of the policies that we have. And quite frankly, the redlining process, I'm sure we'll have a good conversation on the floor or when that bill comes, the discussion about the Reconnect Rondo. Looking forward to that.
And Mr. Chair, I can assure you we will have a very in-depth conversation on this when it does come to the floor, regardless of what bill that it shows up in. And I'll just leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. The next person is Representative Riley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. The first question that I've got relates specifically to the spreadsheets that we were given. And I'm not trying to point out a nit here, but line 74 then goes to line 47, then goes to line 76. And I just want to make sure that we're numbering these things correctly. So when I say line 47, it should actually be line 75. So I'm thinking about line 75 when I ask this question. Is that okay, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Wright. I think the question that you're raising, this is pulled from the bigger spreadsheet. So this is narrowed down. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that we're all on the same line. And so if I tell you I'm on line 47, that sounds misleading. So it's the line after number 74, which is business development competitive grants. The next line, which should be 75, is technical assistance to small businesses. And I read across that line and it shows a negative $7 million. And then in 22-23, in the tails, it shows another $7 million. And then when we go to the forecasts, it is a single $7 million. And this is the only line in the explanations when we were hearing at this beginning that I didn't quite understand how these numbers came to be. And if you can indulge me in understanding how these numbers relate, because it's just I'm just not able to figure out how the two negatives equal only the 7 million. And maybe I'm just misunderstanding how to read that line.
Right. So if I may explain, this is a significant investment of a new $7 million added to the base. I believe the base was 1.4 something. So this means for the fiscal year 22, we have added a significant amount to support small businesses, those who need technical assistance. So that's how you see being put out as the way in the bracket. So Ms. Beckel can provide us a little bit of a guidance to that. Ms. Beckel, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, I apologize for it saying 47 and not 75. I'm not sure what happened there, but we can definitely fix that up. So I understand your confusion. So we use brackets to show carve-outs. So these are brackets, not parentheses. It's not a negative 7 million. It's just showing that of the 8.425 million, 7 million is carved out for this specific purpose.
Representative Riley, I see the transposed numbers. You know, it went from 74 to 47. Should be 75.
And Chair, I'm not trying to point that out. It's just I didn't want to say no, I'm on line 47 and then we all get confused as to where I was talking about.
No, I can see that on the bigger spreadsheet, which shows line 47. That's a technical issue. Trying to run on multiple spreadsheets. We've been running spreadsheet after spreadsheet throughout this process. So I appreciate you catching that line number. So thank you so much.
So specifically, my question was that, and I appreciate the answer on that one. And I'll figure out more how the numerical numbering sequences work as far as brackets and deficits and so forth. My question along that line, and then in general to this bill, is what is the historical return on investment that the loans have had? Because in the bill, and I've read through all nearly 100 pages of this, there's loans and there's grants and then there's loan grants. And Representative Juergens talked about that a little bit previously, but I'm specifically looking for the historical return on investment over time for the loans that have been given to these various organizations. Do we have any of that historical information? Yes, and specifically, indeed. I'm looking at return on investment and what percentages have been paid back and so forth, Mr. Chair.
That's a big question. I know we do have different loan programs, and Commissioner Kevin McKinnon, I think if you can sum it a little bit, it's going to take a long time to explain different programs. But this is if you're referring to the Main Street Revitalization Program, that's a new program that was just created, which has got a $2 million loan guarantee. Deputy Commissioner McKinnon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and members. There are a variety of loan programs that we obviously run, many of which are repaid through a variety of organizations. If you recall, just as an example, last year when we funded the Small Business Emergency Loan Program, we basically emptied the Minnesota Investment Fund repayment account to fund that program. So, yes, there are a variety of these programs that do come back to us. Certainly, there's in various programs there could be defaults, but we could get sort of a historical look for you. I don't have that information at my fingertips right now, but we could certainly get a historical look for you. The organizations that we deal with and particularly in some of the small business pieces as well, they work with businesses, provide technical assistance, do a lot of the sort of heavy lifting, if you will, and then make loans based upon that work. So people just don't get loans as a result of asking for one. There's a lot of technical assistance that goes with it. So, we could get you some information that basically shows the amount of money that's been paid back.
Representative Ryan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly what I was asking. And as we're looking at that reporting, what I'm interested in is how it's reported, to whom it gets reported, and then making sure that we've got the ability to ask questions about the oversight that we want to provide on not only, you know, what's defaulted, what's been paid back, the percentages and so forth. I'd like to statistically understand, you know, are we investing our money wisely, and are we putting it into programs that are seeing a benefit to the whole of the of Minnesota? I think the last question I've got, Mr. Chair, is it's my understanding that as these budgets are put together, and I've heard, you know, both on the floor and in meetings like this, that these budgets are negotiated. It's difficult to change the numbers. It's difficult to move things around. So I am encouraged to hear specifically that line 398 may be out of this project. And if line 398 is out of the project, I would like to suggest to the chair that we take the $6.2 million that has been negotiated in this bill and move that towards the hospitality industry, because as long as it's already been negotiated, we should be able to move those funds into something, again, that will benefit all of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Riley. I think from this perspective, that 6.2 came with that provision. So if the provision lives, and that 6.2 will be put in the next bill that will be, committee, or, you know, where it's going to be landing. So I wish it was part of our global budget, but this was the additional to the global budget. And if it's removed, that goes with it, and it goes to the next conversational level. So hopefully we'll see if there's any help that we may be able to get, because we do have some other additional resources that could be coming in through the federal government, and some of the other additional resources that we have that will be supporting the hospitality industry. That's a very critical industry that we need to continue supporting in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I really appreciate your effort and support behind that. We absolutely need it here in Minnesota.
Thank you so much. Representative Franke.
Thank you, Chair Noor. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. I just have a quick question, maybe two, and this will be directed at Chair Eklund. Since I do not serve on your committee, Chair Eklund, I was a little troubled about something that I did not see in the bill, but maybe you can correct me. The refinery apprenticeship program language, that was in our House file when we pass it off the House floor. Am I correct?
Representative Franke, yes, you are correct. And we kept that in play until the very last moment of negotiations in the work group. And we could not get an agreement with Chair Rarick or Chair Pratt to include it in our final package here.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. I appreciate that answer. I'm also wondering if either one of the chairs, either you, Chair Noor, or Chair Eklund, could also answer this question then. When this bill comes before us, will we be debating a Senate file or a House file?
I believe it's going to be a Senate file, but I don't know that for sure, Chair Noor, if I see if I'm correct on that.
As far as I know, this will be a Senate file, and if there are changes, we will see what changes come up. At this point, it's a Senate file.
Okay, I appreciate that. I just want to say how sad I am that this language did not make it to the final package, and we'll just move forward. So thank you for your answers.
If I could comment quickly on that, Representative Franke, there are still conversations going on, as you are well aware, and it's never over till it's over.
Thank you, Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Chair Eklund, for your commitment to continue having this conversation. As you noted, we will continue to fight for the skilled workforce at the oil refinery. So that's something which we are committed in the House, and we'll see how the end result will look like. With that, I have Representative Byrne.
Thank you, Chair Knorr. I just want to thank Chair Eklund and Chair Knorr for your extraordinary leadership on this. You know, for the better part of 14 hours a day for the past week and a half, we've been frustrated on the House floor about transparency and the bills that come before us, public input. So I just want to say that I hear you, Representative Juergens and Representative Haley. And I think we want to remember when we return to the floor and we take up these bills, who's responsible for that? You know, we worked in very good faith here in the House and on our committee, and Chair Lead Hamilton, Representative Olson and I were left out of the conversation largely during this process. And so I hear your frustration, and the lack of public input for me is alarming. But I just want to say that when we are together on the floor of the House again, let's remember really where the process broke down and how we can come together to make sure that we pass a bill that has some great provisions for workers, more money for childcare than we've ever had before, and that we are trying to lift up the hospitality industry, which I am a part of in my regular life. So thank you to our chairs for the amazing work that they've done.
Thank you so much, Representative Byrne. Chair Eklund, I don't see any other one raising hands.
No, just a few final comments, Chair Knorr, and thank you everybody for your input. First off, I want to thank Ms. Beckel, Ms. Shalene, Ms. James, and Ms. Roberts helped out some before she got pulled away to the other. These fine nonpartisan staff put up with a lot of lot from us, constantly changing spreadsheets, constantly changing language, and we're very patient. So I'm very thankful for what they did and to help us get to this product. And I apologize to you if we were short or abrupt. We certainly didn't mean it, and we're very happy or very. Very glad to have staff that can work with us the way you did. So thank you. You know, I'm probably one of the few representatives that's been on a conference committee every year that I've been in the legislature, and they're all different, and the work groups are different, and I certainly miss the public input, public part of this. But I want to remind everybody, especially those of you that have been on conference committees, there's a lot that goes on in a conference committee that is not in front of the public eye as well, because there were several times where over the years where the gavel had changed hands two or three times and we didn't get anything done, but then all of a sudden stuff was done and we were ready to go 4 days later. So the process changes. Both parties are, if I might say, guilty of making the process work the way they feel that they need to make it work. And Representative Hamilton, I agree with you 100%. I think we need to come together and figure out how to do this better than has happened in this process this year. But it certainly has been a similar process in other years as well. And that, unfortunately, I don't think is good for any of us or good for the public. So we do need to figure out how to make this happen. I'm a middle of the road guy. Most of you know that. I'm just here to get things done. I'm not here to try to be partisan or go after anybody or do any gotcha stuff or anything like that. I just want to work for the citizens of my district as well as the citizens of all of your districts as well. So I want you all to keep a lot of that in mind when we go forward. This bill was a result of a very tough negotiation, but Senator Pratt and Senator Rarick were very gracious in our ongoing work, and sometimes we were pretty much frustrated with each other as we went through this process, but we did manage to get it through. So. I'm just asking you to support this bill when it comes to the floor, because I think overall it's a pretty good bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Eklund. To the members, this is a product of a back and forth fight. I just wanted to assure you we never give up on any of the House provisions. You know, the workplace benefits like paid family medical leave. We fought so hard to the end. And we'll keep on having that conversation. You know, some of these things did not come easy. I'm appreciative of all the nonpartisan staff who put a lot of hours into this, the in-person meetings that we've been having, the hybrid sometimes whereby the systems don't work the way we want, negotiations change in a minute, and all those things that you have put up with us to get this bill done. And I look forward to the conversation on the floor. I'm asking for all members to support this bill. I'm very thankful for the work Mr. Weiss, the committee administrator, has done. He's done a tremendous job to get us where we are. And I just wanted to say this is a good bill. The business support that we have, we wanted more for Minneapolis St. Paul. At least this bill, the way it's designed, is supposed to help those who need the most. And we will make sure that it happens, and we'll keep on having that continued conversation. The workplace benefits that we did not get, but keep on fighting for it. The Workforce Development Fund to make sure that workers benefit from training so that they can get good jobs. There are many good pieces in this, including a significant investment in childcare business development, and also for the business assistance, technical assistance, and DLI provisions. With that, members, if there are no any further questions, we are adjourned for the day.